Okay, we will begin the interview for the purposes of the recording. Folks, we're going to start. For the purpose of the recording, this is an interview for the school board attorney position. This is August 13, 2026. I want to say welcome to Sam Jackson with the Spencer Fane Law Firm. We appreciate your applying and your interest in the role and eager to have a conversation with you. We have 45 minutes allotted for this interview and discussion today. And I'm going to turn it over to Vice Chair Claire Reeves to begin with some questions. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here and for responding to the request for qualifications.
Thank you.
It was very clear to me when I read your packet and your cover letter that you understand that there's a big year in front of us. We have 5 new board members. We have a new general counsel for the district. We are embarking on a superintendent search. You mentioned that you're a Williamson County resident.
Yes.
And that you worked with the Williamson County Board of Education about 10 years ago on a special education matter.
Yes.
And so I was curious, what made you want to work with the board again?
Well, I will say this. When I was with the school board the last time, Jason was general counsel. So that was kind of a new spot for him at that point. And the board did, at that point, outsource more direct legal services. And I worked with Jason and then his, oh my gosh, I'm trying to remember his name, his successor, Bill Squires, in a couple of special ed cases. And so I really enjoyed working with you. It wasn't that, I don't think that they outsourced the work at that time, and that's probably a little more expensive, and I understand that, and so they brought that in-house. But I saw everybody quite a bit at TSBA meetings and things like that, and this is kind of what I do. I've been in Nashville and Williamson County. I was thinking about it a minute ago. I moved here in August of 2001 after clerking for a federal judge in Virginia, and then about 2003 I went to another law firm, and since that time I've been 50 to 60% of my work's been with school boards across the state. So this is kind of what I need to do. This was in my backyard. I couldn't imagine not applying for this.
Okay, great. So Spencer Fane, you said it works with 13 schools,
yes.
Private schools right
here
now?
Here in Nashville. Well, here in Tennessee.
Here in Tennessee.
Yeah.
And so what would you say sets your firm apart, you and your firm apart from, say, an independent or smaller boutique firm?
It's a good question. I think with my experience, I have, like I said, I've been doing this for 25 years, somewhere around in there. So I've gone through everything from who's going to sign the contract for the Pepsi Cola or the Coca-Cola scoreboard at the softball field to Title IX claims to special ed cases to injuries happening on campus to dismissal hearings. I won't say I've done everything, but I don't think anything will surprise me anymore. I had 2 calls this morning. One was about a IEP that we were getting ready to get sued on in one district, and another district called me about suspending a teacher for an investigation. So as far as that, there's very few of us in Tennessee that really do this work a lot. And I'm one of them. I do quite a bit of it, and I've had a lot of experience in it. I think I could help.
So walk us through that in a little more detail, because one of the things that we emphasized in our RFQ and that you clearly understood from your cover letter was that we're looking for objective conflict free advice from a board attorney that is separate from the general counsel for the district. And so it sounds like some of those examples, maybe you might be advising the district directly?
It depends. So I do both. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, in smaller school districts, as you can imagine, the director takes on many roles, including HR and everything else. And I have to work, if I'm working for the administration, I will have to work hand in hand with the director, but also have to keep the board advised. I maybe do it a little different than some school board attorneys do. I like to have at least a good relationship with board chair and vice chair so that I can pick up the phone and call him, her, and have a call and say, hey, here's what's going on. I need you to be aware of this. I know the director's told you this, but this is coming on the horizon. There may be a time that we have to bring this up in front of you. This may be a settlement. This may be a course in the litigation that we need to take X, Y, or Z. And I like to have that relationship, and I think I have that in all the school districts that I represent. I've got one new school district that I am that I took on earlier this year. Has a really good relationship with the director of schools there from another school district that she was in before she became director of schools there. And I make time to go out and do this with the board before they hired me so that I could meet them and have a direct line of communication with them. I have done, particularly to you all, I will say this, I think I have probably done, I try to think of this on the way here, so forgive me if I'm one or two off, but I think 7 director of schools searches that I have helped districts through, both with TSBA's help or another search firm's help, and then the smaller districts, as you can imagine, that might not be able to fund a search like that. I've done the search for them or helped them with the search, helped them with their qualifications for the director, and kind of been the person that vetted some of the applications before they went to the board to take a look at. So I've kind of done it from every cost perspective and every perspective I think that you could do with directors of schools. Likewise, I've had to work with boards when they decided to part ways with their director of schools. That is never comfortable. I will never say it is. I have been on a stage in a elementary school where we were discussing the firing of a superintendent, and we had every state trooper in West Tennessee was standing around with their riot gear because we had threats. Mm-hmm. I have done that too. I've had what I would call amicable separations and help negotiate those. So even when, I just want to make this clear, I know what you all are trying to do with having an attorney that represents you and gives you advice as a board as a whole, but I've always felt and still feel that once the board hires me, now I can get direction from the director of schools because he or she is the person that is doing the day-to-day operations. It's really hard for you all to get into that, and you shouldn't. But at the end of the day, my client is the school board, mm-hmm. and you're the one that pays my check. You're the one that signs my engagement letter. So the board, and you have to act as a group, and I understand that, but generally speaking, I should have a pretty good relationship with the director. I mean, excuse me, the chair of the board.
Sure. And we would expect there to be a relationship with the superintendent and with the district's general counsel, but we want to be able to have a sounding board if we have policy questions or wording on a policy. And so I guess, how has that worked in other districts that you serve as the attorney for? Like, are you advising them directly on policy? Do they have a general counsel that is drafting most of it?
I think in one of my school districts now has a general counsel, but I'm directly interacting with the school board a lot of times on policy issues, especially. I know that Ben Torres would shoot me if I said this, but I have drafted policies for a school district that was not part of the TSBA's program mm-hmm. prior to Ben's involvement, when there were some transition issues maybe, and we were going through and just redrafting all those policies. And in fact, I think that district had not redone their policies. I know you're all going to be shocked at this. I think it was 10 or 15 years. I mean, there were things in there, statutes that didn't exist. So we had to start from zero. So I've done everything from that to, a big thing. It's still a big thing, but 5-10 years ago when social media really became a thing, I spent a lot of times working with school districts on social media policies, computer policies, cell phone policies, and those things before the legislature legislated on those issues. We had to deal with them, so I was picking up that and trying to help them in the best way we could to accomplish the goals they wanted, but try to maintain the legality. So, mm-hmm. The ACLU or some other group is not sitting in front of your school board meeting with a band saying, this is wrong and we need to fix it.
And were there ever instances in those situations where maybe the board and the superintendent or the administration was not in agreement on?
Yes, ma'am.
And tell us about, like, how you navigate that?
Once again, board's my client. My job as an attorney, as I see it, is to tell you what you can and can't do legally, in my opinion, and to base that on facts and cases that I have seen and research that I do. But at the end of the day, the ultimate decision is sitting in this room. I can give you advice. I can't make decisions for you. And quite frankly, I would probably give that advice to both parties. You know, here's what's going on. Here's the problems that we could have if we institute this policy. We need to tweak it here. We need to tweak it there. And if somebody had a suggestion, I think my job is to say, hey, that may or may not work depending on how this is going because of this statute or this case or just something that we don't know a lot. One of the things in education in Tennessee, and I know you all know this, is that every year we get new laws. Sometimes we agree with them, sometimes we don't. We have to follow all of them until they're enjoined or thrown out, right? So when that happens, here's what I'll tell you. I think this is the easiest way for me to say it. I'm going to tell you what my opinion is based on my legal experience, not where I live, where I'm going, and I won't lie to you. And that's about the best I can give you because I can't tell you exactly what's going to come up. But everybody here is old enough to remember Dragnet, right? Just the facts.
Great. Thank you for that.
Can I pause for a second?
Sure.
Donna is saying that she's having trouble hearing your questions.
Oh.
Would you be willing to move down closer so that she can hear them?
Here, I will get you a chair and you can sit right there.
I think if you're here.
Donna, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
That was going to lead me into kind of how we conduct our meetings, which you may be familiar with since you're a Williamson County resident, but we have a policy meeting the first Monday of the month, then our work session, and then our school board meeting.
Yes, ma'am.
And so we're looking for a board attorney who can be present at all three of those meetings, but also be available as questions come up from board members. And so your packet mentions a senior associate, mm-hmm. Bethany. You're a busy guy.
Yeah.
So are we always going to be working with you or?
So team? I would say it would be primarily me. I carry this thing with me everywhere I go. Unfortunately, my wife doesn't love that, but we had a discussion about that today. There will be times, I'm not going to lie, that I will either be out of town or in the middle of something and can't attend, but Bethany is the one I put into the packet, but we have, you know, I've got 800 attorneys across the nation. We've got a group in St. Louis and that does similar to me, does the same kind of practice. We've got folks in Houston that do the same kind of practice. They don't know the Tennessee law as well, but anything federal is going to be the same. So I've got people I can put here. If I can't be here, I can be on the phone. I can be on Zoom. It's not unusual for me to attend meetings. So I'm an empty nester now, so I've got a little more time.
But if your wife is on you on the phone, you
yes.
Well,
she's a lawyer too, so she understands. Yep.
She gets it.
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So then back to the superintendent search is, sounds like you've done the gamut in terms of helping boards hire a new superintendent. What process would you recommend for a school district of our size and for our board?
So the first thing I would do is spend a little time with your advertisement, your qualifications that you want, and a lot of times we don't have very good job descriptions for the superintendent position because it's a statutory position that you appoint him or her to. And, but job descriptions can be very, very important under federal law related to FMLA, EEOC issues, things like that. So I tend to start there and then look at what you're going to require or what qualifications you want as board members for your next director of schools. And I think that's a way of limiting some, or at least controlling the type of resumes that you're going to get. And then being very strict about whether somebody who has submitted an application or a resume, if they comply with that. In other words, if they don't have that qualification, are you, is this going to be a situation where we have a vote to allow somebody to participate that wasn't as qualified as we want or didn't have X, Y, or Z that was in there? But I would suggest against that. I think you should come up with a good document to begin with, send it out, and regardless of whether or not you use a search process or a search service, the search service is great. And I think one of the things about that is it gives you a narrowed down group, so that I know you guys have a lot of time in this room particularly, and you want to streamline that. But what I will say about that is the search teams sometimes take away what I think is, I guess, the personal relationship that you probably need to have with the director. And I keep calling it director. You all know, I'm sure, that they changed it in the statute. It's both superintendent and director. I have changed to director, but I'm talking about superintendent when I say that, so I apologize. But I think that personal relationship that each of you probably needs to have with your director of schools is very important. And I think the internal search, while can be more time-consuming, a lot of the times you end up with a better result. Now, not every time, right? But I think that's kind of the gold standard, but it doesn't allow a lot of leeway for you. You got to be here, you got to participate, those kind of things.
Okay. Thank you for that. So let's move on to the Open Meetings Act. I feel that we've been given a very strict interpretation of the Open Meetings Act, and I think we've talked about, you know, doing board retreats, not where we're going to deliberate on votes or anything, but just talk about, you know, the flow of a work session or how we want certain things to look. And I kind of wanted your opinion on that, whether that can be a closed process. If a board attorney is present to guide us.
So here's what I'll say is, especially, let me start out with the executive session and then I'll get to board retreats. Number one, I think board retreats are a great thing. I participate in them. I have given speeches at them. I have been a trainer at them. I don't have a general problem with them. I think they do need to be advertised based on the Open Meetings Act as it is here. It doesn't mean you can't have it outside the county or somewhere it's comfortable for you, but you need to let people know that you're going to talk. You need to be very careful about the deliberation process. But executive session is kind of a little different. If you all hire me, you will hear me in executive session. I have about a 3-minute recitation of the law that I go through. I have it written down so I know that I do it correctly every time, right? But essentially it says, hey, you're here to talk to me. I'm here to give you advice about a pending or threatened litigation. You're fine to ask me any question you want. The minute you all start talking to each other, I'm going out the door because I like my law license and I don't want to give it up just yet. I'm a few years away from retirement. I do take that pretty seriously because there have been some judges that have taken that very seriously, and I don't want to be in that spot. But I also agree with you in that if you ask somebody that's been doing this a lot, their first response is, well, you can't do that. And that may be right, but you need to spend some time with it. Not every situation is the same. So I'm not going to tell you no without taking a look at it and making sure I feel like it is, unless I know 100% the answer is yes or no. If it's on the line, we need to sit down and talk about how we could modify it so that it would be available to you, or how we can't do that, and here's what we need to do.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
So do I hear you saying correctly that the creation of the agenda really is what drives your determination as to whether open meetings applies or not?
Correct.
Okay.
And then, you know, our prior board attorney was essentially a parliamentarian at our board meeting, so I feel obligated to bring up Robert's rules. I'm sure you're very familiar with it, but we just want to make sure our board attorney is
yes.
very strong on.
I have a copy of Robert's rules. I have been through it. I have dealt with it. It's not, a lot of times when things devolve into an argument over that, it's probably best to take a breath and let's start over. Mm-hmm. But if called to give you an opinion on the parliamentarian issues, I would be glad to, but I would hope we could avoid that the best we can.
And in your, you're listed as a mediator?
Yes.
And so I'm sure that that skill set comes into play a lot. As you advise.
Did I tell you I have two daughters?
I have two daughters myself, I understand.
Yes, I'm a mediator in the legal sense and a mediator in the family sense, I guess, too. But no, that does come into play. I mean, honestly, mediation is something I did because it is a way for me to, you know, I see it as a way when I eventually leave the practice of law is to continue to do something. I mediate probably 5-6 cases a year. As the mediator, I probably mediate 15-20 cases a year as a litigant. It was helpful in that, I mean, it is an arduous course. It's 40 hours of training for that, and then you've got to keep up with your CLE at the end of that. But I learned some good techniques in that, but I think the way I learned most about mediation was participating in them and seeing who does a good job and who doesn't. And I try to be a consensus builder in everything I do. I don't, just because I'm a lawyer, I don't want conflict in every facet of the day. I find that Nashville in particular and Williamson County too, the bar is very good about being collegial and getting along with each other. There are other places in Tennessee that I practice law that is not the case, and you have to kind of put it this way. There's a lot of letters that I wrote and I put on the corner of my desk and I came back and threw them in the trash the next day. And I tend to take that attitude in person as well.
Wonderful. Well, I think I'm going to open it up now to other board members if anyone has a question that hasn't been covered. Yes, Dennis.
Do you know any district or do you have any experience with the new state law that allows executive session for the selection of a superintendent?
So it's a new state law. I don't know how that's going to work out, but
That's a good answer.
Yeah.
We don't know yet.
Yeah, we just don't have any interpretation of that. I like it. I think it will be helpful for folks in your position, but if I'm being honest, we need to be careful with that one until I don't want to be the first. I don't want to be the test case. In other words, yeah.
Thank you.
Jay?
So I guess I'd like to hear Lee's perspective, especially with as it relates to kind of the bifurcation of duties and working with our in-house counsel. Not just policies, but other legal matters. Like, how do you see that happening? And do you have any questions for Sam regarding that?
Yeah, I do see that the relationship between you and our attorney is essential. There will be lawsuits, policies, you name it, that both have the interests of the district and specifically the board. And so that collaboration, I think, is going to be key. You kind of alluded to that earlier in your interview, but I do think it would be essential. When it comes to TSBA board policies, as an example, sometimes those model policies will come to us early in the process so that school districts can get working. You know how that
yes,
happens.
Ma'am.
And oftentimes, by the time that everything gets passed, there are things missing from that draft. What's your process, and then how would you envision working and collaborating with Seth when we have new laws that are coming on board? And of course, the board's voting on those, but Seth would also be drafting and producing.
So here's how I do it with the school districts that don't have a general counsel. When the laws are passed, I follow along with the lobbying efforts that are going on with TSBI. I'm in contact with Ben quite a bit about that, just for my knowledge. And if I'm being honest with you, it's because almost all my school boards ask me to come in and do an hour, hour and a half on the new law and discuss them. So I've got my PowerPoint. I'm preparing my PowerPoint as the legislative session goes. And then sometimes my school districts want to change policies. Sometimes my school districts don't want to change policies. But I tend to look at the model policies and figure out where things need to change and just kind of redline it and see where I'm going. Sounds like he's doing the same thing. And two sets of eyes are always better than one when it comes to that. And experience, right? So he may not have had a case where something happened that I do or vice versa, and we can talk about that. So I think that's good. I mean, I end up doing that in my office a lot with running stuff over people that have done this kind of work and say, look, here's what's going on, and how do I thread this needle, so to speak. So it'd be nice to have somebody here who knows the administration, who has been working in central office for these years to try to commingle those two ideas.
Especially in July and August, when so many laws are coming through. I think it's, what, 100, around 100, had some kind of implication on education.
Yes.
And a lot of things are happening fast, so that collaboration is key to make sure that there isn't something that's local, that is kind of a nuance that's unique to us that needs to be included, especially on revisions.
Well, it's not only just that central office needs to know what's going on. I'll give you a great example. What was it, a couple, 3 years ago, where they had the new law that you had to provide the draft IEP to the parent, and it's okay for central office to know that, but we got to get our SPED folks in to have that conversation with them. So the director's got to go to their coordinators and make sure that that's going to be done. And then that was a fun rollout. I'm sure you remember that. And, you know, those kind of things, making sure that not only the policies change, but that the folks that have to implement the policy know how to.
So, Sam, the...
Yes, sir.
I mean, one of the reasons that I wanted this position kind of refreshed was, you know, over the last couple of years, board members have always talked to TSBA, have always talked to Ben. In recent history, I think we were doing so instead of going to our in-house counsel, and was also our board attorney. And so often the TSBA, you know, legal counsel was kind of brought up in board meetings almost looking like he was giving us advice, even though he will swear that he never gave us any advice and he didn't, but it was purported that way. So I know you obviously have a relationship with Ben. Like, how would you see our utilizing TSBA? Like, I mean, it's a resource that we're a member. We obviously can still do that. But how do you typically tell board members how to take TSBA, you know, information we get from them, but get our advice from you? Like, how do we figure that out?
Well, here's the secret I'll let you in on. And unless Ben's lying to me, and I don't think he is, when one of my school board members calls Ben, he'll talk to him, but he either shoots me a text or gives me a call and says, hey, one of your board members called me, and here's what's going on. So he's trying to keep me advised, and I think he does that for almost everyone that does what I do. But I do have a very good relationship with him, and if I'm telling you that Ben and I have never disagreed, I'd be lying to you. We do, but we tend to have conversations about those things that we disagree about and kind of come to, I won't say that we always open each other's minds, but we understand the point. But as a school board attorney, my perspective is sometimes different than Ben's, and that's just the nature of the beast, right? So it might not, what's good for you may not be good for a school district that I don't represent and is out there in the world. So I have to be careful with that. And Ben doesn't have that luxury, because he's representing every school board that's a member across the state. I tend to try to be very collaborative when it comes to that, and I've just asked Ben early in my career because, and Randy, if you're listening out there, Randy was the previous general counsel. Randy and I didn't have that relationship or didn't have that agreement, and it's kind of like the old story, you know, judge, if you're going to try my case, just don't lose it. Just don't give my client the wrong advice. And Ben and I have come up together. You know, Ben was started after I had been practicing 5-6 years, so he and I both we're learning at the same time to kind of together, and we tend to agree pretty much on at least board policy issues and funding issues a lot. And Ben will rely on me a lot of times when it's a litigation issue, like a Title IX issue that somebody's called him about and he's not sure about it, or a EEOC issue, because the other part of my practice, 50-60% is school board law. The rest of my practice is generally employment. So I'm dealing with the EEOC, I'm dealing with FMLA stuff, those kind of things, wage and hour things for private employers. And to also represent, I don't think I put this in there, but I represent some other public boards. I represent a railroad in Lebanon, and I represent the Convention Center Authority in Nashville. So public board meetings are not something I shy away from.
Can you say more about the disagreement you may have with Ben, for example, on a policy or a particular matter? Is it more about, has it been on matters of substance in terms of how to interpret what the law or the policy says, or is it more about how it's applied?
I think both would be the answer to that, but generally it's probably heavily weighted towards the policy itself, not the application, but what is implicated here and what we need to do to make sure we're complying with this new statute that came out, or this new reg that came out from the State Board of Education. How do we thread that needle? Now, a lot of times, as you all know, with legislation, there are sometimes unintended consequences that come out, and a lot of times we have to fix those, and we have to figure out, hey, we can't really fix this right now, but we need to go to the legislature and make sure it gets fixed. And one of those was, let's just say I had another case where, and a good example is that, is when you're in, if you're in a special ed situation, if you're qualified under special ed as gifted, all right? Gifted is a state law disability. In other words, the state law controls that. And up until that point, you didn't have to have a manifestation meeting if there was a behavior issue for a kid who was gifted. Well, the legislature messed around with that statute and forgot to put that back in. So we had, in a district, we had a gifted kid who got in some trouble, and the question was, do we have a manifestation meeting or not? They didn't have a manifestation meeting, and we got into a due process claim, and, you know, I had to deal with that due process claim as it was. I'm talking to the judge and saying, this is crazy, you know, we shouldn't have to do this. But then I called Ben and said, hey, we got to figure out how to get this fixed, because this was an oversight, pretty clear oversight, but, you know, we only had one legislative session a year, so we had to do it the next January. But Ben was helping me facilitate and talk to the people that may need to be talked to try to get that taken care of as well.
Martin? So if you were awarded the contract, how would you be billing us?
So I'm happy. I have clients that, let me just say it this way, I have clients that do both retainers, and that's a little hard when you haven't had a history with a client before, so they don't know what I've charged in the past. I also do just straight billing by the hour. My hourly rate, y'all don't have a heart attack, I'm going to say my hourly rate for standard work that's not school board or publicly related is $8.50 an hour. I cut that to $3.75 for school districts. What I do at that point is, rather than, for the younger lawyers that work with me, my colleagues, I just say it's $375 across the board. In other words, it's $375 if you talk to me, it's $375 if you talk to Bethany, or $375 if you talk to somebody else in the office. That way, it's still a cut for the younger lawyers, but not as much as it is for me. And I'm willing to take that on for myself, but I don't want to punish them for agreeing to help me and help you. So it's kind of a flat rate for everybody in the firm. I wouldn't charge you $375 for a paralegal to look at some discovery or something like that, but for lawyers. So that's typically how I do it, and that's built in 6-minute increments, 10th of an hour. You get a detailed bill every month that will likely go to your director of schools, whomever that may be, or I can send it directly to the board chair, either way. Those are attorney-client privilege discussions in there. My entries will be attorney-client privilege, so please don't share those outside the district without first letting me redact them. They are public record, no doubt, but there are things that we can redact from that need to be produced. Otherwise, the retainer works like this. You pay me a flat monthly retainer, and you have full access to me. In other words, that's helped in situations where I'm doing a lot of work within the district, because I don't ever want a director or superintendent to be in a position where they don't want to call me because it costs money. And I understand that it costs money to talk to a lawyer, better than most, but I would much rather you spend 30 minutes talking to me before the bus gets in a ditch rather than after, right? After I can still help, but I could have helped a lot more if you'd called me and had that 30-minute discussion with me before. And I think the retainer encourages that.
You brought up open records requests. So I guess you have handled those in the past, or for the districts that you represent?
Yes, ma'am.
You currently handle them?
Yeah.
And how does that work?
If it's, some districts are different. If it's something that's not out of the ordinary, they don't usually involve me. But if it's something that they have a question about, they pick up the phone, call me, especially if it's asking for example things that would be attorney-client privilege. I think I have 4 lawsuits right now over the Open Records Act in different places. But if it is me, I go through the board's policy, I go through what was presented, and, you know, quite frankly, it surprises me, even if the board has a very good policy and a very good form for someone to request open records, that probably 50% of the time they're not done correctly, and you can deny them based on that, and that's what I would suggest. But if they're done correctly, we need to go through and say, do we have these records, or are we going to have to compile them? Because we don't have to, as a board, and I say we, I keep doing that, you as a board don't have to compile records. You don't have to create things that weren't there. You don't have to create spreadsheets. As you probably get open records requests from vendors who are trying to see what the prices are that you have paid other vendors in the past, so that they can produce a bid or try to get in the door with the business. And they'll send, give me every purchase order that deals with, you know, erasers for the last 5 years, and here's how I would like you to detail them, and here's how I'd like you to send them to us. We don't have to do that. And by the way, here's what it's going to cost if we go in and search our records for erasers for the last 5 years. And if you're willing to pay that, here we go. We'll have somebody compile them for you. But I tend to, open records are open records, but I tend to make sure that folks follow the law as it's written. My feeling on that is that if you skirt the rules for one group or one person, and you hold the other group to the fire, that just leaves you open to other things. So the best way to do it is to interpret them all just like you do every other one, and have a set way that you respond to it.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Can you talk about the range of sizes of the school districts that you have worked with?
Yeah, so I have worked with Williamson County, which is probably the biggest one that I have worked with. I have Robertson County is the I think the biggest that I'm representing right now, it's either that or Bradley County out in East Tennessee. They're very close in size. I think I have the smallest school district in the state in Lake County.
Lake.
Yep. And I have represented them for 20 years, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I like to go duck hunting. I have some really good friends up there. So I've kind of done what I would, I've seen a school districts get way bigger than they were when I started. You know, Robertson County is a great example of that. The influx of people moving into Robertson County has been, over the last 10 years, has been kind of crazy, and they keep getting bigger. When I tell you I've been through 5 or 6 superintendent searches, I have been there when they chose their superintendent for the last, I would say, 20 years. And I'm thinking 1, 2, 3. This is either the 4th or 5th person that I've helped through that process. Let's see, who else? I've been with Weaker County for years, and they're a smaller rural county, but they're doing real good in their scores over the last few years, and got a new superintendent there. Weakley County is one of those places where you're superintendent for a long time. So I think I've been through 3 superintendents there. Lake County's probably had 4 or 5. I did Grundy County for a while, and we had 2 or 3 there. So it's, but Robertson County, sorry, I got off track, but Robertson County is probably the biggest one that I have currently.
So for all of the districts that you represent, do you attend their board meetings on a regular basis, or one of your associates?
Depends. Most of the school districts in the rural part of the state don't ask me to come. The distance is a little bit a problem for them. I have Robertson County. I attend when needed, but that's a lot recently. I'm trying to think of anybody that had me at every meeting. I don't think so. I mean, for my work with the convention center, I'm there at every meeting they have. For the railroad, I'm there for their meetings, and for the I think that's it.
And for the meetings that you attend, are you often called on to adjudicate procedural questions? You know, I know this question has come up before, but maybe just say a little more about the procedural ruling on a motion, things like that.
Some of the districts that I'm in, I wouldn't be there unless it was going to be contentious, is really what it comes down to. So yes, is your answer. I have spent a lot of time. My mediation comes out in me a little bit at that point. But yes, if I'm at a board meeting for some of my districts, it's because there's a problem, and there's probably going to be some procedural issue that comes up that I have to give them advice on.
Okay. Any other questions?
So I guess I just do want to follow up on what Josh said. So do you plan to be at all of our board meetings?
If I'm not out of town or indisposed, yes. If I am going to be out of town, I would absolutely give you notice of that and make sure that you're comfortable with the person that I'm seeing. Unless it was an emergency and I couldn't tell you.
Any other questions? Sam, thank you very much.
Thank you all for putting up with me. If you have any questions after this, feel free to reach out.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.